Did you know that homeopathy has been used on the Solomon Islands for 120 years? Today, Jane Lindsay will be sharing more about this fascinating project with us, as well as speaking about the healing orchid flower essences. You can find out more about Jane at www.janelindsay.com.au. Enjoy the episode.
Welcome to the Homeopathy Hangout, where we discuss all things homeopathy from around the world. And now my mum and your host, Eugenie Kruger.
Hello, homies, and welcome back to the Homeopathy Hangout podcast. Today, we have Jane Lindsay over from Eastern Australia on the show, originally from the UK, though. So welcome to the show, Jane.
Thank you, Eugenie. I'm delighted to be here with you this afternoon.
So lovely that you still have your beautiful British accent as well. I do quite like the accent. And we got to meet each other in person in Brisbane in November, and you had a poster presentation there at the AHA conference.
Yes, that's right. The poster presentation was on a wonderful legacy of homeopathy in Solomon Islands, which has been prescribed to hundreds and thousands of people across 8 or 9 islands of the Solomons for the last 120 years. And they prescribe the remedies by numbers, a very simple system.
Amazing.
And if they can do it there, why doesn't the whole world do this?
Absolutely. And that is exactly what we've got to get into. Before we do, though, would you mind telling our listeners a little bit about yourself? Tell them about your background and what you do and how you found homeopathy.
Yes, of course. I've been a homeopath now here in Australia for 15 years, and prior to that, 7 or 8 years in the UK. I came to homeopathy, as many people did, through my son, who was unwell as a young infant. And to my complete surprise, homeopathy worked. I was a skeptic, a businesswoman. There was always a solution for things, but these little white pills, really, I just didn't get the concept initially. But then before my very eyes, I saw the healing potential and possibility of this unique and fabulous medicine. And I just became curious, and I ended up becoming more and more curious. And like Alice through the looking glass, I went down the many tunnels that we all do and embarked on some training at the Welsh School of Homeopathy. And at the end of that, I graduated and licensed with no intention to practice. I was going back to London to, you know, a corporate job and all that. And then on a Friday afternoon, about this time, in fact, a local clinic rang and said, Jane, you've just graduated as a homeopath. How about you come and work for us? And I said, yes. And then I said, oh, actually, I'm going back to London for this corporate thing in a couple of months' time. So no. And they said, well, think about it. And really, it was a no-brainer. Spoke to my husband. The idea of going back to London when we were living in a beautiful part of South Wales with 2 children, 2 dogs on acreage. What was I really thinking, you know, commuting to London and back 3 or 4 days a week and all that would entail in terms of stress, travel, finances, etc. So that's how I started off in homeopathy.
That's absolutely beautiful. And you have done a lot of professional development as well with lots of different people in lots of different places. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, I've been very fortunate to have a broad range of homeopathic teachers and methodologies all across the globe. From the UK, I used to head out to the Hahnemann Institute in The Hague in the Netherlands and did much work with Elise Timmerman, initially on the matridonal remedies and on trituration to C4, C5, C6 and beyond. And that took me also to America to a trituration group that she facilitated and indeed to New Zealand. I also did my postgrad in Calcutta for a couple of months with Subrata Banerjee. And that was so eye-opening to see homeopathy at grassroots level within slum clinics working so effectively, but also in the hospitals. We had access to cases that were being seen by regular physicians who elected in their 5th year of training to use homeopathy. And that really inspired me that the potential and possibility of our medicine is way beyond the coughs and colds and acute things that so often is how we come into homeopathic medicine and what many of our parents are using it for in the home. So that was fascinating. I also did a couple of weeks in Goa with Sankaran and his many teachers. And the sensation method is something I respect entirely. I don't use it all the time. You know, the slum clinics, we had 10 minutes. You saw the case, you took the case and you prescribed. The sensation method, 3 hours later, you might arrive at a remedy. Well, that's a luxury for a lot of places, but very effective as well. What else have I been up to? Oh, yes, I actually took a year out of my training to set up a group called Friends of Chernobyl Children in the UK. We were the 18th group, so there were comparative, effectively, I should have set it up as an ethically approved trial. There were 17 other groups of children that were coming to the UK as part of a 5-year health improvement program. So we liaised with doctors, dentists, opticians, the schools, the churches. We brought a group of 20 children with two interpreters for a whole month. And that same group of children returned to us every year for a whole month for 5 years. And indeed, Vanya, our little boy, well, not so little at 12, came right up until we left to come to Australia. He'd come for Christmas as well. And that was an opportunity to again see homeopathic medicine make such a significant impact in the lives of people whose diet and nutrition was poor, whose circumstances were particularly difficult generally, many of whom were orphans. And yet our children grew substantially taller. They were healthier. They had fewer colds. The gastric issues that many suffered with cleared up on first visit. One of the children actually didn't speak, or we didn't know, but she hadn't spoken for about 4 years. And she was just 7 when she came to us. And when we went back to Belarus to see her and check in at the orphanage, they said, well, yes, this child has never spoken since she nearly drowned in a river 4 years ago, but she's come back and she's so verbose and full of words and stories. And we think it's just the excitement, or we thought it was, but now, 6 months on, she's still talking. What have you done with her? And we gave a remedy connected with grief and water and all that good stuff. And yet another little child, oh, she was always fighting and spitting and grabbing things. She wouldn't get off the pogo stick. She was like a wild animal, but she'd been treated like that in the circumstances. And we treated her, we supported her health. And when we went back to Belarus, she'd been adopted by an Italian family, but she came to see us to thank us for what we did. So there were some just beautiful examples of homeopathy in very difficult circumstances, making substantial differences to the lives of these children and indeed their parents. And I recruited sort of 7 or 8 qualified homeopaths because I was only in my 3rd year then. And I took a year off in order that I could do the fundraising, basically. My background was marketing and that side of things. So I did a lot of fundraising, a lot of talking to schools and groups and persuading people that they should support us. And then we had to get police screening and interviews with host families and all the good stuff that you need to do to ensure that the children are going to safe homes and to homes where they're going to be well cared for. So that was another project. Yes, I've been very fortunate to have had the opportunity to study with many people, and the Welsh school in particular had someone different teaching every weekend. So Misha Norland, Tony Hurley, Melissa Asalam. I have memories of Melissa Asalam, and she spoke of all the matrodonals before I even knew Louis Aliev. And she spent one evening up a tree with, because she also did these tree essences, with fairy lights around her head and grinning like. And I'm thinking, yeah, this homeopathy, this is interesting.
That is so cool. So she was sitting in the tree with fairy lights around her lecturing from up there.
Absolutely. Yes.
That should become a thing. I think we should bring that back. I never had the opportunity to meet her, but oh my gosh, she sounds like an amazing woman. And she certainly has given many gifts to homeopathy.
Yeah. Beautiful woman. We have lost so many great homeopaths in the last 4 or 5 years. Her and Misha, of course, and many
others. Apple, yeah. It's been Robin Murphy. It just, it has really just felt like I spoke to somebody about this the other day. It really feels like there's been so many, but I guess it's just kind of natural that people are kind of getting that age, I guess, where they're just moving. Yeah. Even homeopaths are not immortal.
No,
fortunately or unfortunately.
That's absolutely right.
Yeah, we have them in the spirit world. They are guiding us. I know that beautiful Danessa Apolline, whenever she does triturations or anything like that, you know, she's always calling in all these spirits. And I know I feel them on a daily basis working with me in the clinic.
Absolutely.
I am really excited to have a chat about the water medicine in the Solomon Islands. Tell our listeners a bit about that and how you got involved with it and what is it?
Well, the water medicine of the Solomon Islands goes back over 120 years. I was approached within 3 months of landing in Australia with two children to get integrated into schools and sports and things, and trying to set up a clinic. I kept getting this email from SSEC, South Seas Evangelical Church. We need more remedies. You're a homeopath. Send us remedies, please, please, please. And so I forwarded this email to the pharmacies, Martin and Pleasant, Similem, and everywhere, and to the AHA and Arrow and anyone that I thought might be able to help, because I felt I was too busy. Anyway, it kept coming back. So in the end, I got in touch, and the treasurer was coming over to Brisbane and met up with myself. And, you know, he wanted to know about the homeopathic project because he'd inherited it and really thought it was something a bit of the devil, potentially, or not quite kosher, or no, it's the wrong language, isn't it? But he was suspicious. And so I was able to just educate him in the background and history of homeopathy and its legacy, how it preceded pharmaceutical medicine. And most GPs in the 18th century would have had a homeopathic kit, much as the one I've got with little cork vials, 360 remedies. That was the medicine of the day. And he explained that they had this amazing legacy, and they called it the water medicine because they dispense in water, and that 150 village pastors had kits and would be dispensing from those remedy kits of 56 remedies by the number. And that they had a handbook, which is here, which you can't quite see because of the background.
Just pop it in front of you. If you have it right in front of you. Yeah. How to use some. Oh, now you've disappeared. It's like a magic trick.
No. Anyway, so they have this handbook. And a marvelous woman called Margaret Bartlett actually spent 10 years over there. And I managed to contact her sister because Margaret had passed. And her sister was living in the Blue Mountains and was able to send me some of Margaret's notes. And Margaret Bartlett was a sort of Christian missionary who just fell in love with the Solomons and the people. And she persuaded the Medical Homeopathic Association in London to send her the correspondence course that all the medical doctors had overseas. And so I've got those notes and various other things that she was responsible for producing the handbook so that there was a reference. But of course, in the Solomons, most people, you know, they speak pidgin and they're not particularly, or they weren't at that point particularly literate. But now, the standard of education and literacy is much, much better. So this legacy actually started with a chap called Northcote Deck, who was the first Christian missionary to visit the Solomon Islands. And he spent 2 months at the London Bible College and a couple of months at the MSN, which was the Mission Services Medicine. It only closed in London about 6 years ago. And so he had a couple of months learning about homeopathy and had a box of remedies largely to protect himself and to treat tropical fevers for himself and his family. But he ended up preaching and healing with a box of remedies in one hand, Bible in the other, and that's how it all started. The original box was 36 remedies. And, you know, they know them by number. So number 5 is belly run, which is hot diarrhea. Number 13, slippery birth. Colophyllum opens the cervix. They've got accident medicine. They've got belly shut, which is constipation. And this legacy lives on across 8 islands. So what happened was Robin Gauzet and myself went out for a bit of a exploration and to do an audit of what they were doing, how they were prescribing. And we started off in Honiara, the capital, and spent 2 or 3 days with the church and the actual dispensary in Honiara, which happened to be just literally 50 paces from the hospital. We met with the pharmacist, and he regularly sent people post-operatively to the dispensary at SSEC for medicines like calendula, hypericum for pain, because they had so little at the hospital to give people post-operatively. So that was interesting too, that there is this, you know, there has been that dovetailing. And indeed, when training programs were run the following year, he came along, was more than happy to participate. And also, you know, we taught people how to do blood pressure and various other things. So he got actively involved in some of the teaching as well, which was lovely, really lovely. So what else to say? What else would you like to know?
Well, didn't you recently, because we were trying to hook this up quite a while ago, and I think we were trying to get it out before you had another trip. Did you just have a trip over there? Or
we were trying to plan a trip, but for a number of reasons, it didn't happen in February of this year. So we're currently updating the handbook because it hasn't been republished and it does need some updating. And we also took some miasmatic remedies across, like tuberculinum. It's a very tubercular island and lots of people have benefited from that. We ran clinics whilst we were there as well. And we also visited a couple of the islands, including Mileta, and ran a clinic in Auki, which was literally on the water. And people came all day, mostly in Honiara. They'd set a time and a date and they'd turn up either a day early or 2 days late. So when you go to the Solomons, it is Solomon's time.
And Island you time.
quite yeah. what to expect. And that's fine. You just have to go into a different mode. I mean, here in sort of Western civilization, we run to tight schedules and things like that. It's not like that out there at all.
And I would imagine, is it quite easy, like in the slums in India, places in Africa, at the Maasai villages, where you give a remedy and you get quite an instant result because they probably don't have that access to pharmaceutical medication and they're often probably not that drugged? Or is the Solomons different?
I would say when we first went in 2010, that's exactly the case. Since that time, however, two things have happened. One, childhood vaccinations have been introduced, and that has brought some side effects. And also the mRNA has now been given as well. So those are another, you know, and Wi-Fi has been introduced. So these were environmental factors that did not exist. There was no Wi-Fi. We couldn't contact anyone whilst we were there. And there was only air conditioning in one cafe.
They're so lucky to now have all the same problems that we do.
yeah, maybe. So we're in the process of rewriting, you know, training programs, and we're looking for young, enthusiastic people who have a sense of adventure and who would love to go and cut their teeth on some training with these marvelous, beautiful people. They are so receptive and so appreciative of anything we can do for them. I mean, last year we did raise within 10 days $2,500 to replace three kits of 56 remedies across the main dispensaries. And that was thanks to the Aurum Project, who put up a FundMe page for us. They've been very instrumental in assisting and facilitating a number of things to do with this project, which is great. I'm also vice president.
Of the Aurum Project?
The Aurum Project.
Amazing.
I didn't mention.
The Aurum Project is incredible. We'll just give them a little shout out while we're here, but I purchased many of my books from them. Just aurumproject.org.au now, but if any of you wanted to purchase, aurumproject.org.au, want to purchase some homeopathic books, they sometimes have secondhand books there as well. But yeah, just be careful going to that book barn section on their website because you will lose yourself in there. They have a great selection. And it's basically the only place that we have in Australia to purchase books locally. There's nobody else that has their stock of homeopathic books, which is brilliant.
Yeah, they inherit a lot of legacy when people retire and things. And yeah, the range of books they have is superb. And it is a major fundraiser for them. And if you're not a member of Aurum, I would encourage you to consider so because the cluster groups, the access to information, videos, webinars is superb. So get involved.
Plus, Lindley is just awesome. So you are actively trying to get another group together at the moment to go over? Like, what sort of things do you need to happen to make it work?
We need money or people who can use their air miles to come to the Solomons. It's very cheap to go to the Solomon on points, I guess, because it's not really a tourist destination yet. And the other way is raising funds. We've replenished remedies, but there will be other things that will be required. They should be able to print the handbooks themselves. It's more manpower and people to actually write courses so we can teach them and train their potential trainers, so they can become more self-sufficient. A bit like Jeremy and Camilla have done in Africa. They've not only been running clinics, they've now graduated homeopaths from Africa, from Tanzania, who are now qualified homeopaths and do the prescribing and running the clinics. And that's what they've been up to over the last 15 years. In fact, they went to Africa at the same time I came to Australia.
I was actually just thinking it would be great to train them up in Ton Janssen's homeopathic detox therapy protocols as well, because they have those vaccines there now, like training them up in how to actually do a detox protocol.
That's a really good point, because at the we didn't do any of that. We didn't need to in 2010 and 11.
Yeah, who's coming over with me?
Great. Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, that would be something. Just, you know, the difference I've seen in my clinic since I've started using Tong Janssen's detox therapy protocol. Amazing for the people over there, training them up in that.
Fantastic. Yeah, I've got his books and information. I use some protocols that we were taught with Colin Griffiths and things in the UK, but I'm very keen to learn more about what he's doing because I think the environmental load is so huge at the moment that...
Absolutely. Yeah. What are some of the conditions that they're struggling with over there? You said like tropical fevers and things like that. What was some of the stuff that you were treating there?
Well, they get regular cyclones and monsoon weather. And so with that comes a whole raft of tropical disease, including dengue, including malaria. They get black water fever, but that's really quite deadly. Mm. When we were there, however, that was before the cyclone that went through and created huge devastation in a number of the villages. Mm. We would be seeing, you know, I say normal things. You'd see heart disease. Mm. You'd see menstrual issues. We had cases of diabetes. And it was being completely supported with homeopathy. There was no pharmaceutical medicine involved in at all. There was one young girl who had a patent ductus, a hole in the heart at birth. And that had become, as she was becoming a teenager, it had opened. And she and her cousins were singing and had produced a CD to raise money for her to have the next operation. But of course, the hardship, this poor girl... The hardship that comes round and does the voluntary operations wasn't due for another 5 years. So a quick backstory, this played on my mind enormously when I came back in that February 2010. I went across to the UK in the June and stayed with a friend whose daughter's a nurse in Sydney. And she said to me, Jane, don't you recall, Joe is a pediatric heart nurse. She works with pediatric heart surgeons in Sydney. Now, I had already exhausted the Rotary, the Queensland, this. Robin had been a pediatric nurse here in Brisbane, and nobody but nobody could be of any help. Within half an hour, we'd emailed Joe. She'd spoken to her boss. He'd agreed to do the operation. You do need to go through the Rotary. So I had to go back to the Rotary and say, actually, guys, you know, this is happening. And she was flown over with, I think her mother had passed, with her aunt. And they operated. They had to do a second operation. It was quite complex, but she's now fine and she's training to be a doctor.
That is so cool.
But no, she and her cousins sang for us on several occasions and we've purchased some CDs. But, you know, the Solomon, is it a dollar over there? I can't even remember what the currency is. The Solomon whatever is worth so little, so little. It would have taken far too long to raise the funds from that. But they were just beautiful, beautiful children.
Wow. And how do they administer? You said missionaries over there, or did you say the ministers that have the kits and then people just go to their local church? And how do they administer it? Or tell us a little bit more about that side of things.
So there's 150 village pastors. They each have a remedy kit of 56 remedies, and they're responsible for dispensing. There are, however, three major dispensaries, one in Honiara, one in Auckland, and one on one of the other islands. And that's where all the medicating potencies are kept. So if you go to the village pastor and you've got a cough or a cold, they'll ask you a bit about it, then they'll dispense the remedy. And what they do, they put one drop in a bottle of water. So they have plastic bottles of water, you know, sealed. They're fresh. Mm-hmm. They're not refilled like some of them were in India, which created a lot of Delhi Belly in Calcutta. And they are told to shake and sip the remedy. So the succussion happens and they sip and they keep that. And when it gets down to an inch, they replenish it. So it's very much the Banerjee, Subrata Banerjee's method of dispensing and keeping it in the water. Yeah, they're getting an altered dose. It's increasing in its potency. And that's what they do. One or two drops in half a litre of water. And yeah, you see people get well, as you say, we certainly did in 2010, within a few hours or within a couple of weeks that we were there, people came back with their children or with their aunt or their uncle who was unwell. And yeah, it's very rewarding work in that respect because they're not seeing multiple practitioners like so many of our beautiful patients that come to homeopathy who've tried everything, who are doing everything, and oh, someone mentioned homeopathy can help. And you know, you're sort of unpacking all the different things they're doing and trying to get to the core of the case. Whereas there, it's this is me, this is what's happening, this is my eczema, this is my skin disease, this is my cough, help me. What remedy? What number do I need? Simple, done. So it's fun. I mean, it's very hot, very humid, but it's a fun environment. And you're invited to, well, you're expected to attend church on Sunday. There's no work on Sunday. And the church services are very long, but they are just singing. And it is the most exquisite singing. I mean, the human voice, accompanied or unaccompanied by music or instrument, is just amazing. I mean, it's heart. It's the heart chakra that lifts us, that creates community. And then there's food and a feast. So there's a celebration every Sunday, and it's all day. Lovely.
Wow. Amazing. And how many trips have you done over there? Well, how many trips have other Australians done? Are they going over regularly? Or is it just every
Well, no day? One's been since 2011. I was there in 2010. Robin went back in 2011. And she may have visited briefly in 2012. By that stage, I had a lot going on with my children who were teenagers, and I didn't go back. So she went on her own, but took her husband. And I must give a shout out for her husband, Sky, and son, Arlo, because when we were initially running clinics and doing an audit out there, they were at the markets trying to procure food, which was an all-day effort to find food, basically. So people that do come, we need to bring, you know, crackers and pâtés or things, because some days there's fish and some days there isn't. There's always root vegetables, which they generally cook in the ground throughout the day. But yes, I think I lost a bit of weight whilst he was. And we had a wonderful Japanese, what's the organization? There's a charity that sends various people to help with various health projects. And they had a little Japanese lass teaching aerobics to these beautiful buxom island women to church music. And it was such fun, such fun. I'll never forget those aerobic classes. They were tremendous.
That sounds amazing. Well, it would be really great to get another group to go out there, hey? And are you still, like, so if somebody wanted to go out there, would they get in touch with the Aurum Project or with you, or how would
they? They should contact me through my email, jane@janelindsay.com.au. Just drop me an email. But yeah, we really need people that can commit to a couple of weeks when we go, and to people who might contribute to actually writing a training manual that we can then identify their own train the trainers out there, so they become self-sufficient and they don't have to give a plea for people to come and teach. Yeah,
that would be amazing, just giving that power back to them in their own hands, hey? It's whenever you get like Westerners going over the places, kind of playing the savior role, it's just not nice. Yeah. Like, if you can just empower the local people to treat their own people, that's where true healing happens.
Most definitely.
Something else I'm personally interested in, which I have not heard about before, are the healing orchids. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about what they are and where we find them? And the moment I saw that, I'm like, oh, I have to have them all. I feel like a magpie sometimes, or is it a raven? Like, just try and collect shiny things. I've got like a box of homeo botanicals here that I still need to play with. And I've got all the Australian bushfires. This is like Pokemon. I have to have them all.
Well, we can arrange that for
you. Oh, good.
The healing orchids are the most exquisite and unique range of flower essences. If you like the Australian bush essences and you've worked with Edward Bach's essences, these are a vibration all of their own. If you think about the orchids, I mean, they are actually the most proliferant flowering species on the planet. They're one of the longest standing flowering plants on the planet. There's probably an orchid for each of us. The range started with half a dozen essences about 20 years ago. So early in my practice, I came across them at a time when my husband was working with a joint venture in Japan. And he was using the Australian bushflower essence, jet lag or travel. Mm. It's travel, actually. And when I rang Don Dennis, who is the distributor or was the distributor for the Australian bush essences, I said, Don, I need some more. And he said, well, actually, we've just made our own, and I really think you should try this. And he sent me a little bottle. And I said, I remember it as a handwritten label. He said, oh no, I would never send a handwritten label out. Anyway, the photography that he puts on the bottles is exquisite as well. And he does time lapses, all sorts of things. Anyway, my husband used this essence. His colleagues were on melatonin and various other drugs. And he was the one that could do the presentations despite being up all night doing karaoke and drinking whiskey. So something
sucky.
And I became very curious about these essences. And I went up to Gia to meet Don and to do a training course for a week. And I just fell in love with them. There's now a range of 188 exclusively orchids, but including some gemstones. So there are essences from emerald, from amethyst, from ruby, but the orchids themselves cover, they're miasmatic remedies almost. I find they enhance and precede or work alongside our homeopathic remedies, hugely supportive, you know, at a physiological level, but at a mental, emotional level. We have things like soul's grief release. We have tiger's eye. I know I've got tiger's eye as a homeopathic as well. Radiant courage is the latest essence, which is an essence for our time, these difficult times that we're in as we see the world at war almost, and, you know, financial institutions beginning to collapse and all that goes with that. But Don has the most gorgeous greenhouses, and obviously orchids grow in different climates. So on the Isle of Gia, he has set up, you know, a cool greenhouse, a temperate and a very hot and humid. And so the essence, the orchids themselves obviously come from South America, from all around the world. And that orchid house, they do speak to you. And he'd had orchids for years. And it wasn't till one of the essence makers from America came over and said, Don, why aren't you making essences from these orchids? They are talking to you. And he hadn't heard them. And then about 5 years later, he just woke up one day and thought, oh, yeah, right, okay, we make an essence. The unique thing about these essences, they are not cut in the making. So unlike where with bush and indeed with the bark, and I have something to share about the bark essences, if I may, afterwards, so remind me, they're not cut. And
I think that is one of the newer ways to do it. I hear more people talk about immersing the flower in the water while it's uncut. Exactly. I really like the idea of that.
Mostly it's at night with moonlight. And then in the morning, the water is poured over the blooms. And then it's bottled as mother tincture and then distributed in smaller bottles. Yeah, I have a list of the therapeutic qualities of the 188 essences, which I'm very happy to provide to any practitioner. It's not for general public consumption because some of it would appear a little esoteric, perhaps. and too much information in the public's hands can be very dangerous. But they are just beautiful. They're like friends. There's now four boxes. There was one small box, and now there's four boxes. And I open them and it's like friends jump up out at you. And they're lovely.
I love orchids. And I think it's also the practical side of me. I just can't get my head around giving somebody a bunch of cut flowers that dies after a few days. So I always give people an orchid because it just, like, for me, that just makes more sense in my head. So I have several orchids in my home, and any of my friends know if it's their birthday, they get an orchid from me. And here in Western Australia, we have the most exquisite wild orchids. And September, when we get some, you know, after winter, I don't know, it's not really winter that we have here, it just seems hot all the time. But when we've had some rain in the supposed winter season and these incredible orchids sprout up in September, people come from all over the place to Western Australia to walk through our forests over here and go orchid hunting. And they've got these beautiful spider orchids, and they're still discovering new orchids here in Western Australia all the time. And it's just the most unbelievable thing. You look at the bush this time of year and it's just so arid and dry. And you just can't imagine that buried beneath that is this exquisite flower.
About pop. Yeah, we came across and did the walk from lighthouse to lighthouse. Oh, what do they call that walk? It's like an 8-day walk.
From Augusta somewhere. It's not the Bibbulmun Track?
Not the Bibbulmun Track. Okay. It's more on the coast. But we came inland through some of the forest as well.
Oh, beautiful.
What is it? It's Cape Naturalis.
Yep, that could be it. There is Cape Naturalist down there.
And there's another Cape. Anyway, there's an eight-day walk, and it is absolutely exquisite. And yes, the orchids we saw, and we went in September, which is our wedding anniversary.
Oh, cool.
We had everything, you know, including mobs of kangaroos as you came round. It was utterly exquisite. So, yes, if anyone's I should work for the WA tourist industry, shouldn't I? Definitely.
September's a good time to come visit. Weather's really good that time of year.
Yeah.
Oh, amazing. Oh, Jane, you've got me so excited now. I'm going to have to go collect all of those as well. Is there anything else that you want to share with our audience? And you said to remind you, there's something you want to say about the bark flowers.
Oh, the bark flowers. Yeah. So the recipe for those has changed slightly in the UK and how they are manufactured and made. And there is a chap called Julian Bernard who makes the healing herbs. And he actually has rights now to use the original bark recipe. And so Julian Bernard is based actually in, just outside the Hereford Abergavenny border, very close to where we used to live. And he uses organic flowers. He does the proper sun immersion, whereas the bark factory does it slightly differently. So if anybody has issues with their bark essences not quite being as vibrant and dynamic, then Julian Bernard's Healing Herbs. And his website's great, and he's written extensively about the bark essences and has the full support of the family. So
that's great to know. There are definitely little bits and pieces that happened in the background, even in the natural health industry, that it's important to know about. So
yeah,
amazing. So Jane, is there anything else that you want to share with us before we finish off? And can you also tell our listeners, you have given your email address, but just once again, tell them how they can get hold of you and anything else that you want to share with us.
Absolutely. What else to share? I think that's about it actually for now. Yeah. I mean, I'm increasingly interested in homeopathy for agriculture and for animals, the land. And I've done a certified permaculture course and looking at constellation work with the land. But that's a whole new spectrum.
Constellation work with the land, like kind of family constellations, but with the land?
With the land.
Wow.
And yeah, using homeopathy to replenish and regenerate our soil that has become so depleted of nutrition. So that's an interest. I'm not about to disappear, although yes, looking at agricultural sciences, and there's some great PhDs over in WA, so you never know, you might see me there in my retirement in 10 years time doing a PhD just for fun, because I've got the time then. Yes, so no, that's just something else buzzing through my head all the time and thinking, what else can we do to demonstrate efficacy of homeopathy, and how do we get our soil back to where it should be so we have a clean diet? Because at the end of the day, you know, homeopathy is fantastic, but if we've got a clean diet and we're hydrated and we sleep well, then the remedies just fly. Yeah, it's all about that. And the Cape to Cape walk is Cape Lewin to Cape Naturalist, if anybody wants to check that out. There's guided walks, so you can do it yourself.
I was told off the other day because I was suggesting that for Homeopathy Awareness Week that we should all sprinkle homeopathic remedies in the land and waterways and stuff to help heal the planet. And people were like, oh, but you're not, you know, receiving consent. And I'm like, well, they're putting medication in our water every day and they're spraying us with stuff from the sky all the time. So if we go get like a nice agricultural spray plane and we just spray like some stuff over the whole planet to just regenerate the soil and the plants, I don't think that ethically that'd be too wrong, just quietly.
I think that would be an excellent idea.
And I bet you think so too.
And there was an episode of Hand, Foot and Mouth in South Wales where there were funeral pyres of animals and they insisted on burning so many animals. It was actually at the beginning of the Friends of Chernobyl Children's Project, and I remember it well. And we had half a dozen farmers contact us as homeopaths. We were quite a strong collective. And they said, our grandfathers had this issue. They used homeopathy. What can we put in our water? So we administered waters to the farm, remedies to the farms that asked. And on the map that the papers printed, published, of where the funeral pyres were and the farms that were affected, there were green spaces. And every green space was a farm that had homeopathic remedies.
You're just like goosebumping me again. That's so cool.
How had I forgotten about that project? But that really, I just thought, wow, that's an evidence base. But again, it wasn't set up ethically approved and dosing and all the rest of it. But in desperation, we did whatever we could because it was so awful what was going on. Farmers lost so much of their livelihood and livestock, and there were so many suicides as a consequence of that, which could have been avoided had, you know, the government chosen to take a slightly different route.
Which is funny considering Prince Charles has an organic farm and he only uses homeopathics with his sheep. Mm. So, you know, if it's good enough for the king, then, you know.
Quite right.
Just saying.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, Jane, I'm glad we finally got to catch up. I am just like planning my Solomon trip in my head. But then, you know, I've been really bad. I had a chat with Subrata and Subtashi, and I'm like, yeah, I have to go to Kolkata. And then I had a chat with Camilla Shira, like, yeah, I'm going to Tanzania. And so I'm like, yeah, I'm going to go to Solomon's. Just need to actually make one of these trips happen.
Yeah, Solomon's isn't so far, you know. And as I say, Qantas won't take many points off you if you've got some because their planes are never full. So
okay, cool. Amazing. Oh, well, thank you so much. It's going to be really interesting seeing what comes from this and seeing if anyone else resonates with this as well and wants to make a little trip over there. And, you know, if they want to get some orchids to get in touch with you, or are you still taking on new clients?
I am taking new clients, but I do have a sort of 3-month wait list at the moment. Mm-hmm. But there are cancellations because all my clients book 3 or 4 appointments, you know, 6 months, 9 months ahead. And then a school play comes up, or they decide to go on holidays. So there will be gaps that come in. And yes, I will take new clients.
Amazing.
Because families get well, they get self-sufficient.
Exactly.
And then there's openings.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much for today. That was really fun. And I hope we get to catch up again in person soon.
Yeah. Thank you, Eugenie. It's been a great pleasure and delight to chat with you.